The St. John's number against Duke, I said today on Follow the Money, is the stinkiest number of the entire tournament. Their sports books are begging us to bet St. John's. That scares the daylights out of me.
I bet under the total for that
game. Like that.
I just have the sneaking suspicion this is going to look very similar to the Kansas game. That St. John's can't shoot. I liked Pitino's, you know, interview for one of the commercial breaks. They don't think we can shoot, and we're proving them right. But we're going to keep shooting until we can prove them wrong. And like Duke's going to do the same thing. They're just going to play off all their guys. They're going to pack the paint and make sure that they can't get them inside. And maybe you can force enough turnovers and get in transition and run and do enough. But I think these teams, I mean, this should be an ugly slugfest between the two.
This is Pod to the Futures with Mitch Moss and Jonathan Von Tobel on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, we're back. Another episode of, man, I was going to say Hardwood Handicappers. It's Pod to the Futures, folks. Jonathan Von Tobel, Mitchell R. Moss alongside as well. You and I have seen each other a lot over the last few days, Mitch. We've been hanging out, watching basketball games. Even though I am not drinking anymore, I still feel somewhat hungover as we are on to the Sweet 16. How were the first 4 days of the NCAA tournament for you, my friend?
It was a lot of fun, man. Las Vegas is undefeated when it comes to enjoying the games out here. And it felt kind of like, I was almost a little bit sad today walking through, because I spent a lot of time, as you said, different casinos, sports books from Thursday until Sunday, and places absolutely packed, wall to wall, madhouse most of the time. And it's a blast if you've never done it. It's one of the best weekends of the entire year. And then when you come to the casino on Monday to get ready for the show, you're like, eh, there's nobody here.
Yeah.
And it's like you wait all year long for something like this, and then all of a sudden, in a blur, it's gone, and you're like, yeah, now we got to wait again for next year.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I guess, so the takeaway is that the NCAA tournament, the first 4 days of the NCAA tournament are a referendum on life, you know? Just you blink, and it's gone, just like that. You enjoy your time with your friends. You think it's going to last forever, and then all of a sudden, it's gone. So appreciate the moments while it's there. I'm very excited for the Sweet 16, and this is where I wanted to start, because I know we talk a lot about futures, obviously, here on this podcast, but in general in the betting community, futures. And at this point of a tournament like this, you probably don't want to bet futures because you can get the rollover parlays, whatever it is. There's really not a lot of value in some of these. But I think there's a team that I have become more and more infatuated with that I wanted to ask you about that I think might be worth adding to the portfolio to win the NCAA tournament. Would you fare to guess, like just care to guess what team it is that I am looking at here? It's not a crazy long shot.
Okay. I want to guess until I'm right.
Okay.
And these are not necessarily in order of who I would guess, but Purdue?
No.
Iowa State?
No.
Nebraska?
No.
I give up.
They're going to guess it together, right?
I don't want to guess anymore. I hate this game.
That is a side note I always love, because I like to ask questions on purpose looking for an answer. And it's always a dangerous game in media where you're like, did you know? Or whatever it is. And they're like, no, I didn't. Okay. Houston, 7-1. Okay. I've used this term or this way to describe Houston a little bit a couple of times when talking about them. It seemed like a lot of people forgot about them when they lost those three straight games in conference play. And they have been great since then. Obviously, the only loss over that stretch, I believe, is Arizona in the Big 12 title game. I have watched this team a lot in the Big 12 tournament and in this NCAA tournament so far. And I got to tell you, the way they defend, their rotations, the way they close out on guys, the communication defensively, the point of attack defense in the backcourt is absolutely incredible. Their three-point shooting is awesome, and they have a really good profile, slow pace, decent rate of three-point attempts while shooting about 35% from three. And, of course, the behemoth, if you will, in the bracket, slain over the weekend by Iowa in Florida. At 7-1, I don't know, man. I know these teams at the top are very good, but I think that they can go toe-to-toe with any single one of these teams in the tournament. And I don't think anybody outside of maybe Arizona, should they meet them in a national championship game, would scare me.
So here, I mean, they have a lot going for them, right? I mean, they're playing their games in their own city now. Illinois is going to be tricky because Illinois is so good offensively, right? And they have dudes that are going to be able to get in open space, break their pressure, I think. They're height is going to be a major factor in this game. Everybody in that team can shoot. So it's a tough matchup. But potentially two games at Houston, and if you win against Illinois, you're looking at Nebraska or Iowa, which you're going to be a decent-sized favorite in that game.
Yeah.
Because of the Florida factor, that's such a huge break. So you're playing your games at home, and there's no Florida. And at that point, you get to the Final Four. And here's the thing, sometimes in sports, you have to build the foundation before you can win a championship. It's just maybe tough to come out and win it that. Well, last year, they had Florida on the ropes for 35 minutes, maybe plus, in that national title game. They probably should have won the game. They didn't. They had some dudes come back from that team, obviously. Samson's a really good coach. They brought in, Fleming's is outstanding. So you thought that the defense would always be good because it's a Samson coach team. But the offense was supposed to be better this year because of a guy like Fleming's, and it is. And they're more reliable. So you got that close last year. You have all those things going for you. Now, when they get to the Final Four, that team from the East is not going to be easy. That's going to be a really good team regardless of who it is. But I think you kind of have to like the path right now for Houston.
Yep. And a reminder for anybody who doesn't just know the bracket off the top of their head, those teams that Mitch is referring to, Duke, St. John's, Michigan State, UConn, those are the two games in the East. And then, of course, winners of those and then of the Elite Eight would be your opponent should you make it to the Final Four. And I like your thought process there when you talk about building the foundation. It's a lot more dramatic, but the best example that I immediately think of, let's go back to 2018 when a little team named Virginia loses to UMBC as a one seed to a 16. They pretty much roll it back with everybody from that roster and they come back and win a national championship the next year. So there is something to kind of tasting that bitter pill and then going back with a pretty same crew and giving this another run here. And I don't know. I just the eye test is really what does it for me for Houston. You watch them on defense. They're just so good. And
yep.
We'll see where this number gets to, because 3.5 seems to be a little large at first blush against Illinois. But market bet it up quick. Some spots open 2. And got immediately to that 3.5-point mark. So we'll see if there's some buyback. I would expect that there probably is some folks that are willing to grab 3.5 if we get this back down. But yeah. Houston at 7-1 for me was the team to look at in these adjusted futures. For those who don't know, your favorites right now to win the NCAA tournament, Arizona is your favorite at +330, Michigan at +340. Duke at +370 has not looked particularly great through first two games of the tournament. Houston, as I mentioned, 7-1. Then you get to the double digits. Purdue 13, Illinois 14, Iowa State 17, and onward. Would you look at any of the long shots? I know I've heard a lot of St. John's, at least in terms of them being a dangerous team. That half-court offense is not particularly great. Any of these long shots that you think would be worth looking at outside of Houston or any of these others? Or maybe a favorite?
By the way, on Houston, I kind of like +130 to win the region still.
Sure.
And you can also bet, how about this? Now, it's a three-way bet, so the draw would kind of ruin this if they get bounced in the same round, but the team to advance further, Houston against Iowa State, Houston's +130.
Okay. I like that.
I mean, I'm kind of a fan of that bet as well. So I have Arkansas in several bets. I would not add them at this point just because their path, you're looking at, this is where the rollover parlay is probably even better because you would bet them on the money line against Arizona. In theory, they'll get Purdue in the next game. They'll be a pretty decent dog there. Not a huge dog, but they'll be a decent dog there, I would think. Roll that over. Then you're probably looking at Michigan, if they make the Final Four. And then, like we talked about, the Houston-Duke side of the bracket. So I think they're completely dangerous. They have as much talent as anybody. I'll take Acuff against anybody as well. But I just don't know if they have enough dudes on that team to make a bet right now. What are they, 40-1, I think, still?
Yeah.
To win the whole thing? No, so I'm not, by the way, with the tournament going the way it is again for the second consecutive year, I really don't have much interest in. And there's one other thing on St. John's. I'm betting a dog, by the way. But the St. John's number against Duke, I said today on Follow the Money, is the stinkiest number of the entire tournament. Their sports books are begging us to bet St. John's. That scares the daylights out of me. I haven't touched them. I don't think I'm going to bet them because of that. Well, how is this number 7? That doesn't make any sense to me.
I bet under the total for that game.
I like that.
So yeah, I bet under 142 and a half, or we're starting to see some 141 and a half appear. I mean, excuse me. I just have the sneaking suspicion this is going to look very similar to the Kansas game, is it not?
Very
St. John's
so.
Can't shoot. Nope. And I liked Patino's, I don't think you were there with me yet, but Patino's interview for one of the commercial breaks, he was just like, yeah, they don't think we can shoot and we're proving them right, but we're going to keep shooting until we can prove them wrong. And like, Duke's going to do the same thing. They're just going to play off all their guys. They're going to pack the paint and make sure that they can't get them inside. And maybe you can force enough turnovers and get in transition and run and do enough. But I think these teams, I mean, this should be an ugly slugfest between the two. So we'll see if that actually ends up happening. But I would agree with you, too. After what we've seen from Duke, who has put together, what, 7 minutes against TCU, yeah, in which they have looked a little bit like the Duke team that was terrorizing the ACC, which, by the way, at this point right now, does not look that impressive considering the way the ACC has looked in the tournament so far to this point. So I don't know. I'm with you in that. Why in the world would I not take 7? Other than, man, they are just asking you to go ahead and grab it.
They really are. I mean, especially when we talk to Richie Baccellieri on our show on Friday, right? Longtime mm-hmm. Las Vegas odds maker. We're throwing potential matchups at him, and I wanted to get his take on the Arkansas Arizona game if that's how it was going to play out. And he was throwing around 7, 7.5. And I said, okay, well, what about Duke St. John's? I'm like, there's no way it's 7, 7.5. I said, it's got to be closer to like 5. He goes 3.5.
Wow.
How? So he's, this time of year, Richie's off by maybe a point on some right. of these games. Maybe a point. He's off by 3.5 points with his number. Make that one make sense to me. He's never off by 3.5 points, really.
Yeah.
Especially this time of year.
That's a really good nugget. I didn't hear that. That's insane. And it's not like Duke. You asked him that win on Friday?
That was on that was Friday, yeah, at about 3:30 our time, Pacific time.
So it's because it's not like Duke has been impressive since then.
Not at
that's
all.
The
no,
other,
I mean,
it's not, that's the I other mean, part.
They should have lost to Siena. If Siena yep. had one other player that could have played 12, 15,
one?
18 minutes or whatever, they win the game.
That's all
they win
need
the game.
Is one. Yes.
I know. And then the TCU thing, again, Duke was awful to begin the second half again. And TCU led the game. They were right there with them. Duke got a couple of calls, a technical that completely changed the landscape of the game. And then, by the way, if Foster's not back, how does that look for Caden Boozer against the St. John's Press?
Yep.
So to your point, I think the under is probably the best play in the game.
It is incredible to watch some of these games. And do these teams practice against the press at all?
It's amazing.
Kansas couldn't get the ball in bounds. Louisville couldn't cross half court against South Florida in the game that they were playing when they slapped on the full press. It's like every single one of these games we have seen, oh, we need to get back into this game. Let's just put on a full court press and we'll go on a 10-0 run and we'll get right back into this thing because the other team has no idea how to break this.
Right. It's also as if players have never been coached like end of game situations. Are we going to take a timeout? Do we let him play?
Yeah.
Just foul up by 3. Like in that Kentucky game against Santa Clara. Just
right.
go after the ball. Slap him on the wrist. Put him at the free throw line. You should know that as a player by now.
Yep.
Every kid, this is like, it should be a... I don't understand how it's not driven into these kids' brains at like 12 years old.
All right, let's take a break here. On the other side, we are a futures pod, but these are a couple of days in advance. I want to get your thoughts on a couple of these tournament games. Just see if you have anything that sticks out. And we have a rumor emerging that is affecting the betting markets for this. And I got to tell you, I think it's absolutely insane. So do you want the payoff to the tease or do you want to give me the games and sides that you like for the tournament first?
I really want you to pay off the tease.
Okay. So there are rumblings, rumors, and it's growing louder potentially. And I think you're in on this as well, actually, to an extent. I think I've heard you talk about this on Follow the Money. Despite the fact that the Sacramento Kings have messed things up here and have gotten themselves in the range of like fourth and have slid out of the top three teams in the number one overall pick odds, there are rumors and rumblings that the Sacramento Kings really like Acuff out of Arkansas.
Oh, I'm well aware. This is a talking point on Tuesday's Follow the Money 100%.
And if they get that first overall pick, because I will say this, this is the thing, the part that I think is insane. I don't think Darius Aiko should be the first overall pick. I don't think that a 6'2" guard who can't defend should not be your first overall selection. He should. He'll he might be a very defense. Good player, huh?
He'll get better defensively. I don't think he's going to be Trae Young on defense.
No, I think he'll try, but I think that there are physical limitations to the body type that you are in the NBA today. That I don't think would be worth the first overall pick. And I think if any of these other teams are the first overall selection, I feel pretty confident that Acuff's not going to be it, right? Indiana, Washington, Brooklyn, Utah, whatever. Remember, Dallas had a 1.5% chance to get the first overall pick, and they got it. So we can go all the way down the list. But it would be very Sacramento if they were to win the first overall selection and they went with Acuff with the first overall pick. And these odds have shrunk. I know Matt Eumanns has 100-1 on Acuff to go first overall. I think you've got something in that range as well, or something long on him to go with the first overall pick. And this is getting freaky with some of the rumors.
Well, what is he at right now? I have 120. I got 150. I got 250. Those are the last two are small bets because a sports book really wouldn't take a good bet on it.
Yeah, I'm looking. DraftKings actually has it down. So maybe this is, I assume maybe this is part of like the rumors that are really kind of picking up. Okay. FanDuel has Acuff at 150-1.
All right. That would be the most Sacramento thing ever to do, because how many times have they done this with a guard, by the way? Yep. And how many times have they done it with a guard when they already have good guards? I think of the Halliburton pick after they had De'Aaron Fox, and then they gave up on Halliburton immediately, and then they traded Fox a couple years after that anyway. So they screw up a cup of coffee. I mean, it's just like they can't get out of their own way.
Both of those aren't really doing anything in the league. So
no, they're terrible basketball players. Yeah, right. I mean, it's definitely want to give up on players like that very, very early. I will push back a little bit, though. I looked at the... like, and this draft is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
I'll take Acuff over Bucket Jones, Darren Peterson right now. Snap call.
Man, I would disagree with that. Peterson's good.
Yeah, he's good. He's good. I just have, put it this way, compared today to January 1st, I have many more questions about Darren Peterson. The one player that would be a very serious conversation. And this is coming from somebody, again, who has bets on Acuff to go number one overall. I don't know if I could take him over DeBanza.
No, no shot. No, DeBanza's awesome. I mean, come on. The dude's 6'7", 6'8". He creates on his own. He's got the skills of a guard. He's insanely athletic. Like, there's no way. I mean, I'm more in the camp of where the market's at now. For those who don't know, AJ DeBanza is now the minus 125 favorite to go first overall. I think he's incredible and definitely worth grabbing.
I love the guy. Absolutely. Yeah. But some of these, like, I would take Acuff over Boozer. I wouldn't even hesitate. Boozer might be a really good pro. I have no idea. No clue if he's going to be a good pro or not. And the list go, I actually like Caleb Wilson from North Carolina probably more than Boozer at the pro level. And it's just, again, it's just this dude, like, Fleming's out of Houston. He can't be a good pro? I think, of course he can be.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I love Acuff. I think he is... potentially, and this includes, you know, point guards like Derrick Rose, John Wall. He's Derrick Rose in a different way. Rose was obviously so physical, bigger, stronger, but Acuff's a better shooter. Mm-hmm. And he's absolutely unequivocally a better shooter than what John Wall was. So he's like in the mix for one of John Calipari's best players ever. I get it, like 6'2", but I don't know, man. I watch his kid play. I think he could still going to the NBA. Curry 6'3". So I think Acuff absolutely could have a really, really good pro career. The problem is if he goes to Sacramento, I think it'd be a horrible spot for him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he would go there to rot and we would never hear from him again.
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, which would be obviously terrible for him. Acuff is, for those who really haven't watched him a lot outside of the NCAA tournament, you know, where he's at. If you look at his shooting profile and what he does a lot of, very, I'll call him analytically sound. If you look at his frequency and whatnot, does take a lot of mid-range jumpers, but he shoots them relatively well. Really good from the corners and from beyond the arc. Shoots about 67-68% within 4 feet of the basket so far on the season. 55% on corner threes, according to CBB Analytics, which is absolutely incredible. I wonder what it's going to be. I don't think it's realistic, but I'll ask you this. If the Kings get the first overall pick, what would you make the market for first overall selection? And do you think the market adjusts to that? Do you think that there would be enough out there right now that if they were to win the draft lottery, that there would be enough of a significant adjustment there on Aka?
I don't think just because the Kings would win, but if more stuff came out like this one reporter had today, then obviously it would start to go down, I think, a little bit. He reminds me a little bit of Allen Iverson, by the way, because this dude can get to the rack on just almost whenever he wants.
Yep.
And with his touch from the outside too, like we said, and the way that he can find his guys with his passing skills, like I love his game.
So the two bits of news, and I should probably read these. First off, Mark Spears on ESPN said that a GM told him that they have Darius Acuff Jr. in the top three in the 2026 NBA draft. In this order, he had Devonta Wilson and Darius Acuff, which is pretty interesting. No Peterson, no Boozer in your top three. I don't know if to have both of them outside of the top three is a little weird.
Let me chime in here real quick. We had Fran Fraschilla on before the tournament started. I think it was Fran. I'm almost positive it was Fran who said that he can see Peterson slotting like four or five or beyond in the draft.
Man, I don't buy that, but still, I mean, it's weird. It's kind of draft season now, you know what I mean? So, like, you get all these weird rumors and reports and all that kind of stuff, and then all of a sudden Peterson's going to be the first overall pick and whatever it is. But the other point on this in terms of the news, why we're talking about the Kings, Matt George, who covers the Kings out there in Sacramento for 1140 in Sactown, said that the Kings have Darius Acuff Jr., quote, pretty darn high on their draft board. So just keep that in mind, as Acuff is still 150-1, and the Kings seem to be the team that is out there tied to him, but we'll see if that's actually the case. All right, really quick, go ahead.
Before they were shut down here in Nevada, prediction markets, not going to name names, but I do have, for those of you out there living in a different state, you can still find like players to be drafted top three, I think top five, and definitely top 10. I have Acuff top three and top 10.
Okay. Might get their top three for sure. And top 10, you got to feel pretty good about.
Let me give you the number that I got on him.
Yeah, what'd you get for top 10?
It's weird, because I have made several bets on when it was available out here in town on this. And sometimes I would get screwed out of the number. Like, I go try to bet the number, like, at 6-1. Oh, hey, you got 4-1. Okay. But that was, I got him top three at plus 392. And when I went to bet it, it was, like, plus 550. And he just gave me 392. Okay. And top 10, I bet him minus 172. That recently got as high as like minus 3,500. It's like minus 1,700 right now to go top 10.
Yeah, that's a really good number. Yeah, that's absolutely brilliant. I like it. What do you got? You sound like you're going to follow up there.
No, I think, I by the way, in that game, I know you were going to get to your place for the Sweet 16. I would, I think the over is worth a bet.
Okay.
Arkansas and 167.5.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's because, again, like, Acuff's not the only guy who is far from great defensively for this Arkansas team right now. And I think Arizona getting in that style of game with Arkansas could just get basket after basket if they really just make it easy for them. But also, Arkansas is elite right now offensively. And despite Arizona being phenomenal basically everywhere on the basketball court, I just don't think many teams are going to be able to slow down this Razorback offense right now.
I would agree. I think that's one of the ones that's on my short list of plays to potentially make here. I do wonder, you know, against a somewhat bigger backcourt like Arizona has, how Acuff's going to perform. This is going to be a good litmus test for him when you're talking about how he translates to the pros, because it's a big, rangy Arizona team that's got some really solid athletic guys that I think can keep up with him too when he's running around the court. But either way, I think, pace, tempo, all this sort of stuff. Arizona is going to be more than willing to get up and down the floor as well. That should be a really fun game. 167.5, like you mentioned, starting to see some 168s. The bets that I have made really quickly, Texas took 7 with them against Purdue. That's probably falling for the low-hanging fruit, but I like this Texas team a lot. I've ridden them here in the first few rounds. BYU, Gonzaga. I'm just going to go back to the well here again. I think Texas have been very, very good, has a perimeter talent to bother Purdue, and they're good defensively. I can never pronounce the big white kid's name properly for Texas, but he was absolutely fantastic against Gonzaga. I'm going to give it a shot here. Volketitis?
It's a tricky one.
Yeah, but either way,
that's pretty good.
Volketitis has been great. Yeah, he's been absolutely phenomenal. And he actually kind of tricked Gonzaga and like Graham Ike and like lulled them into a game where it's like, oh yeah, like come on, like you can't really beat me down low. So let's see if Graham Ike can just take perimeter shots and mid-range jumpers and get it done. And that was absolutely a poor performance from Gonzaga. But I like this Texas team. So took them +7 and under in St. John's Duke. I'll also ask really quickly, am I crazy? I think 10.5 is too much for Alabama. If Michigan's going to turn the ball over like we know they can, I mean, that's a lot of free possessions problem. and transition opportunities for Alabama. Like, I think that's something that might be working for them there.
A couple of things here. I don't think Alabama's probably going to have that kind of a shooting night again.
Yep.
Go back-to-back games where they hit, 19 on Sunday night against Texas Tech.
Yep.
But their defense and the way that they play games, are they going to be able to slow down Michigan at all? Don't you think? I was just looking right now as you were talking about that game. The team total for Michigan is very intriguing to me, and you can play with it, go alt numbers. Over 98.5 is 2-1 +210. I think Michigan's going to be pushing 100 points in this game again.
Yeah. I could see a 100-91 type game.
You know what? I could as well. So I think my favorite bet from that game is actually the Michigan team total over.
Sure. Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense.
And then maybe with your play there, Alabama just hangs and they get into a complete shootout with them. And yeah.
Nebraska too.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
What? Again, I said St. John's super stinky number. Haven't bet it yet. How about money coming in on Iowa after the opener? What am I missing here?
I mean, it's just an upgrade for a team that just beat Florida, I guess. I know they split the regular season series with each other. So I talked about this on Follow the Money today. It is, or sorry, your Follow the Money. What show am I? Money Moves. we gotta get more creative with the show titles. It's not my fault. But the deciding factor here, I think this is going to sound dumb, but I do think it's probably tempo and the way this game is played. If you look at the game that Nebraska won against Iowa, there were 74 possessions in that game. They won in overtime 84-75. If you look at the game they lost, it was 60 possessions. So if Iowa gets to play their game in terms of tempo, then it's probably going to go their way. They're 361st in the country in terms of tempo, 62.7 possessions per game. Nebraska is not super fast, but they're a little bit quicker, 66.6. I just think that they don't want to get bogged down into one of those types of games against Iowa. So we'll see. But the quicker game went to Nebraska, the slower game went to Iowa. I think that's going to matter. But numbers-wise, you're going to tell me there's just 1.5 points difference between these two teams on a neutral? I just don't buy it.
That just seems so short to me. By the way, so with the pace that you talked about coming into play for this game, I mean, tournament setting though, one and done, survive in advance. Don't we normally get the slower kind of games typically to play out like that?
And now we're nitty gritty, right? It's Sweet 16. Next round's Elite 8. This is where you're probably going to really start to, Hoiberg's going to overcoach. All of these guys are going to really start to scream at their guys, walking them up, all that kind of stuff. It's a good point.
So, but at the same time, exactly what you said on a new, by the way, we can call this a neutral court, but we just saw this in Oklahoma City. Now, I get it. The fans turned out like crazy for the Cornhuskers. They had never won a tournament game. Mm-hmm. And then that crowd against Vandy over the weekend, that was honestly one of the best tournament environments that you could ever get, on TV. I can't imagine what it was like to even be there live. So good. That's an A+. So that was in Oklahoma City. Now they're in Houston. Why would they not show up the same exact way or even in bigger numbers for this game against Iowa and then potentially to go to the Final Four?
Yeah.
I get it. It's going to be a very big Houston crowd. I just think that we're talking about tens of thousands of Nebraska fans that are going to be here to really not make it a neutral game.
I would agree. I can't wait for that game.
And the number is just 1.5, like you said. I don't know, man.
I'll take my
chances. That seems weird to me. Yeah.
Although tonight I took my chances with the Lakers. And that did not go well.
So how about this? Another stinky number. Was that not a kind of a stinky number? Although Hachimura and Marcus Smart didn't play,
yeah, which kind of burned me a little bit there. But such is life in the NBA. Speaking of, I got a couple of points on that. So anything left in college? I listed off some of the bets that I've got. You got anything this weekend that you want to leave with the people? We'll recap at the end of the show as usual.
So people have asked us to go over most outstanding player of the tournament.
Oh, that's right.
I have to be honest. It's not offered at maybe more than one spot. Maybe we have two spots out here in Las Vegas to even look at it. So it's something I really don't even pay attention to until more books might offer it come like Final Four weekend.
Yeah.
And by then, you probably don't want to bet in any of the numbers anyway.
I also don't trust them. Ever since Ochak Baji won it for Kansas, I'm out.
I don't disagree. That was highway robbery.
That really was. It was insane how bad that was. They were just like, that's the best player.
I can't even remember the name of his teammate. Was it a Robinson type?
Oh, man. I'm going to look this up right now. It's funny. You're right, because I don't remember. I'm going to remember this now, because it was. It was absolute robbery that year. What year was that they won it? 2022? Look at that. Clicked.
Yes, 2022.
Clicked right on it. Was it McCormick? Or was it Jalen Wilson?
No, it was McCormick.
Yeah, right?
It had to be McCormick.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, dude. Yeah, so against Villanova, he had 25 points, 9 rebounds, and he was 10 of 12 from the floor with one turnover. And then in the national championship game, he scored 15 points with 10 rebounds, had a double-double, went 7 of 15, and he didn't win most outstanding player in the Final Four.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, let's see. Baji in the championship had 12 points on 4 of 9 shooting. Come on now, what are we doing?
That seems like it was just, I remember at the time it was off and going down memory lane right now, memory road. It was like same thing, maybe even worse.
Yep. Okay. All right. Let's take a break. Let's reset so I can find out how much time I have left. We'll get to some listener appeals questions and a thought in the NBA. There is a bet that is absolutely, unequivocally worth making, and you're probably going to lose it. So the Lakers' winning streak comes to an end tonight in Detroit. They end up losing 113 to 110 to the Pistons. We mentioned the fishy line. That did not go well. Luka Doncic, though, with another strong performance, 32 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. For those who have not paid attention to Luka Doncic and what he's been doing here in that 9-game winning streak that they rode heading into this game, it has been absolutely insane what he's been able to do. I think it coincides. I'm not going to totally say it, but it might coincide with the whole custody thing with his jilted lover or his ex-lover. But either way, Luka has been absolutely fantastic. In the 9 games heading into tonight, 40 points per game. That's an average. He is averaging 40 points per game, 8.4 rebounds, 7.4 assists, 49% shooting, 40% from three. And again, he gives them 32 tonight in a loss. Because of this, Luka Doncic has leapt up the odds board to win most valuable player. And Mitch, he is now 10 to 1 to win most valuable player. He is the second choice on the board behind Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at minus 1,000. I talked to Mitch Lawrence today on the show, SiriusXM NBA, starting lineup, does some work on Mad Dog Sports Radio as well. And he said what I was thinking out loud, which was, that is insane that Luka Doncic has leapt Victor Wembanyama to win most valuable player. And to pay off the tease once again, there is value in Victor Wembanyama at 22 to 1 to win most valuable player. His odds of winning this award are much greater than that. He is going to finish second, but is it worth really making? Because while there is value in the number for a guy that's probably locked into second right now, is it really worth making? He should not be 22 to 1 though to win this award.
I see 33 to 1 at FanDuel.
Okay, yeah. Shop around, look around.
Is that again, number worth? Does it matter what number you grab if it's going to be a loser, in your opinion?
That's what I'm saying. Like, this is the kind of stuff with these awards that I wish, I will say it till I am blue in the face, that they had different markets. How fun would it be if you had a Luka, Victor, head-to-head finishing position on the MVP ballot? Right? And the way that this is priced, Luka's 10 to 1 to win, 22 to 1 for Victor Wembanyama. I'd be getting a pretty solid price on Victor to finish ahead of him on the ballot.
Oh, you would be. You would be. And again tonight, another blowout win for the Spurs. They killed Miami. He played 26 minutes. He had 26, 15, 5 blocks, 11 to 22 from the floor. Yep. I mean, he's just.
It's insane.
I was talking to John Murray at the Westgate about this after you left on Sunday. And we're just like, talking about all these players in the NBA who are really, really good. And John just goes, here's the way I look at the NBA. And he's not a big fan. He admitted that. He just goes, how is Wembanyama not considered like the MVP or like the best player in the NBA? He's like, every time I watch the guy play, I'm like, yeah, he's probably the best player I've ever seen. I'm like, he is the best player in the league, period, right? I mean, at this point already, he's better than Joker. And that probably tells you that he's the best player in the NBA. Like, he's the most impactful player in the league. Yes or no?
Yes. If you're talking about all around, like offense, defense, everything he provides, yes, he's the best player in the NBA.
Yeah, has to be.
Mm-hmm.
So SGA tonight had 22-5-5. The thing is, like, should he really be minus $10 when that team is so freaking good? Luka has better numbers than SGA.
Yeah.
And Wemby, as we just said, both sides of the court, is like the dude. So I don't know. And by the way, they're right on the heels for OKC. They're going to get the 2 seed. They're going to have the second best record in the NBA.
Oh, and they beat the crap out of them in head-to-head matchups.
Of course, yeah.
Yep. I would agree, I think, with all points that we're talking about here. The one thing that Lachey is going to have over all of these guys, he is having an insane season in terms of efficiency. 134.1 points per 100 shot attempts. It ranks in the 96th percentile. It's better than his mark a season ago. For comparison, Luke is at 123.8. So the counting stats are better, if not in almost every single facet. But in terms of efficiency on top of the numbers that he's putting up scoring-wise, and of course being the best player on the best team in the NBA, that is really something. But when I hear people talk about Shea and his MVP candidacy, the efficiency with the volume and his style of play. I mean, he's not a center averaging those numbers per shot attempt. He is a dude that is creating his own looks and shooting from mid-range and whatnot. And that is a big reason why a lot of people are looking at him. Scoring efficiency, being the best player on the best team. And he does deserve credit for going narrative. The fact that he was able to lead this Thunder team kind of through the thick of a bunch of injuries that they did not really suffer. Jalen Williams came back today finally for them against Philly, but they've really had to deal with a ton of injuries this year. And even with all of that, Shea's been even better than he was a season ago, and they're the one seed.
Didn't that factor into Steph Curry being the first that were unanimous MVP back in, like, what was it, not 10 years ago, when he was more efficient from 28 feet out than Dwight Howard was at the rim?
Yes.
Yeah.
God, that was incredible. That was such an incredible season.
My favorite season ever for a basketball player.
It was absolutely, I cannot believe what I was watching that year. I think that was the year that I claimed the Warriors were boring because they just won every single game. And I think that was also the same year where he pulled up from like half court against OKC in like an overtime game. And you knew the second it left his hand, you were like, God, this is going to go in. Sure enough, he just absolutely drained it. All right. With that, let's move on. Friend of the show? Weston Trapman, Guy in Cornfields, does have a query on Sixth Man of the Year, correct?
Yep. So what do you make about this? For the Minnesota Timberwolves, not named Naz Reid.
Yep.
DeSumo, Sixth Man of the Year. He said, I think he has the stats, but I hear absolutely nobody talking about it. And does Naz hurt his chances too much to make a move? Seems like it's too late in the race, and odds have actually gone up from 20 to 100 to 1. Does he have a prayer to win Sixth Man?
I mean, I think he does. The weird thing about DeSumo, I think we brought him up about a month or two ago because the counting stats for him coming off the bench are pretty impressive for the most part. Now, just as a Minnesota Timberwolf, I think it's just 11.6 points per game. He's averaging 53% from the floor, but he's been great between his two stops. That's what I wonder is he just going to be discounted because he was traded?
Could be.
Right?
That could factor in.
Do you just get forgotten because you've moved here? Again, I'm not entirely sure because this whole Sixth Man of the Year race doesn't look wildly impressive right now when you look at the guys who are coming off of benches and qualifying for it.
Well, maybe the guy who's now the short shot at FanDuel is going to run away with it here. It's Keldon Johnson, who was really good again tonight.
Yep.
I'm holding out hope on my Reed Shepherd ticket at 60-1. He's been inserted into the starting lineup.
You give up on Hawkes?
He was a short shot, moments ago, but also he hasn't been playing.
Yeah.
So I don't know how he stays so high when he's been missing these games. Naz had been dropping, and I don't like Mitchell for OKC. He's not going to get the job done, I don't think. He missed too many games. and kind of fell out of the race. Tim Hardaway Jr., probably not. It feels like some guy could be running away with this award if they really wanted to. And at this point, they're really not. I was hoping it would become a two-man race with Shepard and, let's say, any other guy, and I could just hedge on the other guy, but that's not happening right now.
No, and I think part of the problem for you with Reed Shepard as well, because I know you like him and you have him, is he is starting games now. And so every game going forward won't count toward his six-man of the year candidacy. And so essentially what you're saying is the profile he's got now has to be good enough to beat out all these guys.
Yeah, that's no good for me. How about Rookie of the Year? Flag tonight. This game is going on as we speak. Dallas is tied with Golden State 120, or it's now 128-126 Golden State. Flag has 32 and 7 assists, and his number is now going down as we speak. This is happening in real time. Con Knipl was still higher than $2 today. He's now down to minus 190. Flag is plus 150. Is he going to come back and, quote, steal this award?
I mean, I don't know if any of these awards, these voters have moved off of wanting to give it to Flag. That was one of my biggest criticisms about, what, a month ago, 2 months ago, is the dismissive conversations around Rookie of the Year and the fact that Cooper Flag was just it. And I think there's a lot of voters who made up their mind that they want to give it to Cooper Flag. And I think this race is going to be very, very tight. I don't know why Vijay Edgecombe is still listed. But, you know, like, Knipl, I think, can still win this. But I think we underestimate how simple voters are and how quickly they make up their minds when it comes to some of these awards.
Sure. This could be one of those things where we've had awards play out like this in different sports in previous years where, oh, this is fun. It's intriguing. It looks like Con Knipl is going to actually steal this thing.
Yep.
And then once the tally comes in and they announce the winner and Cooper Flag wins it and he gets like 80% of the first place votes, it was never close.
Yep.
Like, well, it was almost like NFL Coach of the Year this past year. The jobs that Shanahan and Ben Johnson did, and they had, like, quite literally when the votes came out, no chance. They didn't even finish like top three.
I will always reference, I'll never forget the year that Luka Doncic, his first year for Rookie of the Year, and there was a lot of push for Trae Young because Trae Young had a really strong end to the season. And a lot of people were like, watch out, Trae Young. He's going to steal this thing from Luka Doncic. Luka fell two first place votes shy from being a unanimous Rookie of the Year winner.
There you go.
So a lot of people, and Luka was great that year too, and he was more consistent all season long, but people make up their minds with these awards really quickly, and once a narrative begins, it's hard for some of these voters to move off of that. And so I hope Knipl wins this thing. I think he deserves it, especially being part of winning on a team that might make the playoffs, but I do think that some of these voters have already decided that they're just going to give it to him. And we've talked to voters and we've heard from voters that have said, like, oh yeah, like, I don't really look at anything until the end of the year. They're not following this like us. And that makes a difference too.
Yep. Yep. Here's a tweet from Colin Murphy. Nice little wager for the Futures podcast. The Rocket Richard most goals. He's got a big Caulfield ticket, but Fanatics has a rogue 40-1 on Kucherov. 10 or 12 to 1 everywhere else. Five back of McKinnon with three less games played and no wear and tear from the Olympics.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
Like it.
Wish we had Fanatics out here in Nevada. I'd take a little slice of that.
All right, let's take a break here. We'll wrap up. We got about 5 minutes left on the other side. I know you've got a couple of thoughts on the Masters. Wrap with some other thoughts too before we get out of here. Masters right around the corner. And I'm actually kind of surprised. I was looking to take some time off right before the NBA playoffs start, but then the Masters are going to be here. No rest for the weary here on this very, very hard job that is comparable to backbreaking physical labor. Mitch, you've got some thoughts on the Masters. I know that I tailed you on the Goddard play. I'm still sitting on that. It's the only Masters play that I have so far.
Okay, so I know that LIV Golf gets lost completely in the shuffle for the most part. And for those of you who have not been paying attention this year, DeChambeau now, last two events, did incredible. He just beat Rahm in a playoff. Rahm has been unbelievable, like finishing, either winning these events. I think he's won three so far this year, and he is right there, like in the mix, going to a playoff or almost winning like every other event, and he's won this Masters before. DeChambeau has a good history here as well. So I just wanted to point that out because you're right. It's going to be here before you know it. And you're like, oh man, who do I bet on?
No.
I have DeChambeau at 15, Rahm at 18-1 in pocket from the last couple of days to weeks when I've been betting this stuff. I would shop around if you want to add either one of those guys. I'm not going to add anybody else below that. but I wanted to point out to the crowd that they have both been phenomenal on LIV. And some of the other guys that I have over the course of this season so far is Morikawa, not a great number, but 30, got her up like you at 60, I believe is the number, and Kim at 75-1.
What do we make of Scottie Scheffler in this recent run that he's been on, or lack thereof?
Well, we will. I think this week is going to be pretty telling because obviously one event closer to the entire event. And let me see here. I want to get the odds up on this one, so I'm not spitting out any wrong numbers
as
here.
As you're looking for that, for those who don't know, the Genesis finishes tied for 12th, gets off to a rough start, shoots a 74 in the first round, tied for 24th at the Arnold Palmer. Again, really disjointed, inconsistent by his own standards, and then shoots, finishes tied for 22nd at the Players. Has a pretty strong round in there, but ultimately has not been the Scottie Scheffler that we are used to at all with what we have seen from him.
Yeah, he obviously has to pick it up a little bit here and have better results and or win an event or two before the Masters if I would ever consider taking him at his current number to win that event. Just something I couldn't do. Now, he's plus 340 at the Houston Open this week. This field includes Minwoo Lee, Goddard, Jake Knapp, Brooks Koepka, Nicolai, Højgaard, and that goes down beyond that. So it's a decent field, but it's not like amazing or anything like that. If he finishes 15th, 18th, 22nd this week, then his number to win the Masters is really going to get it's plus 480 in that range right now. Some books might have 5-1. Where do you make the number? Will books move him to like 6-7-1? I say unlikely, because as soon as they do, they're going to probably take big bets on that.
You're going to get snapped up real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he hasn't shot, I think this is an interesting stat, he has not shot a sub 70 first round since the American Express.
Been a pretty big issue. So then he falls back and he's got to crawl his way back in just to get to like top five, top 10. I mean, he seems like he's never out of a tournament, but you dig that hole every single time and it gets deeper and deeper as these events continue, then it's just not going to, you know, keep happening. Do we have to recap the bets here?
Yes. All right. So let's talk about what we have here, best bets wise, as we move forward. Adding Houston at 7-1 to win the NCAA tournament, very much worth looking at there. And then for those, they'll be up on the website as well. But our first round bets as well. I took Texas plus 7 against Purdue, laying it with Nebraska against Iowa, under in Duke and St. John's as well.
Very good. Baseball is also here this week.
Yes, it is.
Now, I was hoping to talk about the most wins in March and April. Circa doesn't have them out yet.
I know. Yeah, when are we going to get those? I mean, I guess what, the day before? Tomorrow?
So it's going to be unfortunate for this podcast. We're not going to get them in. We'll have to talk about it on your show, Follow the Money as well. I think Chris Bennett's going to post sometime, probably late in the day on Tuesday, if not probably on opening day on Wednesday.
Yeah. Man, those are fun.
That's the best way to bet baseball, in my opinion, now.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it.
Hit one last year. It was like the Astros one of those months. It was like 12, 13 to 1, something like that.
They may have been, yeah. Yep. Was it right away in the season too?
Yeah, it was pretty early on. Yeah. They're going to stink this year, by the way.
I think so too. Yeah.
Call my shot. Finished fourth in the division.
Hit a couple of those last year, including the one on Milwaukee when they started the month by winning, 14 straight games?
Yeah.
That's always good when you have one of those bets and you're like, okay, well, how do they blow this one? And thank God they didn't. But it typically comes down to the wire like the last couple of days, right? Mm-hmm. Or a lot of times it actually comes down to the last day. And sometimes two, three, or four teams might be involved in it. And so Circa, I believe, will post this week. You can find odds at Caesars and DK right now. But
and remember
I would
to
wait.
Shop, not to cut you off, but remember to shop around because different shops have different rules for tiebreakers.
That's correct.
So
and
I
you
think
have to
Circa
know the tiebreakers.
Circa does fewer losses, I believe, is the tiebreaker. So yeah, just shop around and make sure you read the language because that is a big one. The tiebreakers make a difference if you're finishing dead heat or something like that.
Yeah, I think Circa is fewest games played.
Okay.
And then maybe fewest losses, or it might be vice versa. Mm-hmm. And then the other ones are going to be a total dead heat.
Yeah. All right. Really quickly, first off, good luck this baseball season. That's going to be a ton of fun. We'll have a lot of baseball as we move forward. We had our big futures podcast, which I will say again, Adam Burke did a tremendous job and it still has some legs to it. So go ahead and check it out as part of the library a little bit further down. If you're here, scroll and you can check it out. But We appreciate all the feedback as well. A lot of people have been chiming in, talking about what we want here at the end. We've recapped some of the best bets. We do like more in terms of submissions as well and questions. So we will take all of those that you have every single time at Mitch Moss Radio, at me, JVT, at VSiN Live, and we'll get those in on the show and get those reviews in. We appreciate it as well. They've been absolutely fantastic. Numbers have looked great. We always appreciate the support. So for Wyatt and for Mitch and myself, we'll talk to you next week here on Pod to the Futures.